You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today I want to do a show. It's not a theme show because I'm going to incorporate into my comments several news stories, but it concerns the overriding issue and really in human relationships, whether it's between individuals or groups of people or nations, and that's the issue of trust. And there used to be a game show, as I recall, Who Do You Trust? And the question today is, there are people I do trust, and there are other people I, under no circumstances, would trust. Now, I pose the question, and you're going to get different answers from different people. For example, do you trust the President of the United States? I don't. Do you trust the Secretary of State, John Kerry? I don't. If you ask me why, I'll say very simply, forget their politics for a minute. They both have a history of lying. So I don't know what they truly believe and think about many things. And why that's important is when you're in a position such as President of the United States or Secretary of State, a lot of the media, your television as well as radio, are going to be and print are focused on you. And you're literally every word that you say will be looked at, parsed, analyzed, and because of the internet, the web, it can be a check to see whether it's factual. And that's the problem of many of today's politicians as well as world leaders. They seem to forget that with the internet and the capability to do searches on the internet, if someone wants to, and there are people that do want to, what you say will be recorded many times on YouTube videos as well as fact checked. And for those that have time, you can get a broader perspective, historical perspective, as to what happened in the past to get the big picture. There is a communications challenge for anyone that is a politician or is in the public eye, no matter what their role is, that people can go back and check their statements, whether they're factual or not, whether they're true, whether misleading, or whether they're out-and-out lies. Now, the same applies to foreign leaders. Do I trust the Islamic Republic of Iran that's led by ayatollahs, terrorist ayatollahs and mullahs? Well, the answer to that is no. They have for many, many years, decades in fact, since their religious revolution, been killing Americans, both citizens and soldiers. And just recently, the ayatollah that's leading the nation, he's getting quite up there in age, he's not been in good health, states in a public address, death to America. Now, that's not the first time, death to America. Now, what you need to understand, and there's a distinction I'm trying to make, and world leaders make the distinction, there's the difference between who is the elected or unelected leader of a country and the people of that country. And you shouldn't confuse the two. Because many people in the United States don't support Barack Obama. Many people do, but many people don't. There's a very sharp division in this country. But when you go over to regimes that simply don't have the popular support of their people, the vast majority of the people, although they keep quiet as to what their views or opinions are, not only do not trust their dictators, would like to see the regime changed or overthrown. So trust is a rather key issue between the people of a country and the leadership of the country. Now, where it gets a lot of people's interest and concern is when you have representatives of our country, of the State Department, headed by the Secretary of State, John Kerry, are in the process of trying to negotiate an agreement between the United States government and the Islamic Republic of Iran concerning the activities of the Iranian government or regime in developing and perfecting nuclear weapons. And as I said in past shows, the key here is getting the uranium enriched to a level where it's above 90% in order to have the fuel or core that you need in a weapon for a nuclear bomb. If you just wanted to enrich uranium to generate electricity, you need somewhere between 3 and 5% enriched uranium. If you want to do research, isotope research, that goes as high as 20%. So if you were strictly wanted it to produce electricity or do scientific research, you really do not need to enrich uranium to the 90% level. Now, to accomplish this, one method is to use centrifuges, thousands of centrifuges, and over time, steadily enrich that uranium. More details are leaking out as to what the terms or conditions are of this so-called agreement that the United States is trying to reach with the current regime in Iran. The number bandied about today is that the Iranians would have up to 6,000 centrifuges, which is quite a large number, but the leadership in Iran said they want to go to 190,000. If you had 190,000 centrifuges, the only conceivable reason for that would be to develop and have enough fuel to be able to make hundreds of nuclear weapons. But that is their stated goal, to have upwards of 190,000 centrifuges. So one of the problems is there's a mismatch between what apparently is being negotiated and what the leadership says about who they're negotiating with and what their real goals are. So that immediately brings up the trust issue. Should anyone really negotiate with terrorists? My answer is emphatically no. The only good terrorist is a dead terrorist. And the Iranian people would love to see the current dictatorship of the mullahs and the ayatollahs overthrown. The problem they have is they don't have the weapons. Some do, but most don't. And the current dictatorship, like any dictatorship, this one's a very totalitarian dictatorship, because they want to control your behavior. They want to establish and have established an Islamic Republic where the only law is Sharia law. And they're trying to control in minute detail the behavior of their people. And because the overwhelming population is very young, they have problems doing that. The people that live there are living in a police state where terror is, the first victims of terror are their own people. Now they've expanded their horizons to go into other countries, Yemen being the most recent, but also in Iraq. And they have their so-called proxies, Hezbollah in Syria, supporting the Syrian regime, which is ruled by Assad, who's an Alawite. And that's sort of a sect of Shia Islam. And that's what the Iranians are. The Iranians are Persians that believe in that branch of Islam called Shia. And you need to understand, a fundamental understanding is the majority of Muslims, believers in the Islam faith, are not Shia. They are Sunni Muslims, and they're different branches or sect of Sunni, but the majority are Sunni. And what both branches want to establish is what's called a caliphate, where the caliph is successor. That's literally what the word means, successor to the Prophet Muhammad. So there's an argument that's been going on for over 700 years as who is the true successor. And the Shias are trying to set up their caliphate and expand the territory they control, as are the Sunnis. So you have the Islamic State, again run by religious fanatics that are Sunnis, that control a large portion of both Syria and Iraq, and are at war with a religious sectarian civil war with the Shia in Iraq and Syria. And now Iran, because Iran is sending military personnel to support the Iraqi regime, where in Iraq, the majority of the population, roughly 60%, are Shia. They live primarily in central and southern Iraq, including Baghdad and Basra, where the oil is, the majority of the oil is. And I always want to mention that because a question should always be asked, especially if you're an American citizen, what is the national interest of the United States in the Middle East and in specific countries in the Middle East? And the answers are not hard. It's oil and natural gas. And both Iran and Iraq have a lot of both. Iran has a lot of natural gas, but also has oil, and Iraq has a lot of oil. Those two nations combine roughly, just a ballpark, about 20% of the world's reserves, and that's a lot, and that's the national interest. And you have other nations that are allied with them, including China and Russia. But it gets back to trust. The Iranian regime doesn't trust our elected representatives at all. They don't trust the United States. They refer to us as, in their propaganda, being the great Satan, where the little Satan is Israel, and they lead chants, death to America. And they blame the ills that are happening in their economy and society on the United States. That's why they blame America and chant death to America. But the basic question is, should the United States government be negotiating with the Islamic Republic of Iran? I am emphatic, say no. Because what this regime in Iran is trying to do, and they've been pursuing this for years, is slowly but surely produce enough fuel or enrich uranium so they can have dozens of nuclear weapons that they'll put on missiles and invariably use. Because they're not really rational actors. They are religious fanatics that are trying to expedite the end days, or Armageddon, the return of the Mahdi, one of the successors, caliphs. So it's not like you're negotiating with, let's say, the Soviet Union, where both parties know that should, in the past, the Soviet Union, today, Russia, and the United States would ever go to war, hundreds of millions of people would die. And that for a long time was the doctrine of mutual assured destruction. And that, for all practical purposes, prevented a nuclear exchange. Where there were several occasions, the Cuban Missile Crisis was probably the closest, where that could have happened if cooler heads had not prevailed. The problem you have when you're dealing with the Iranians, especially the Ayatollahs and mullahs that run the country, and control the country, including the Revolutionary Guard, while some are rational and reasonable, most simply aren't. They believe what they're saying and shouting. They believe it. That's why I pose the question, should we even be negotiating with them? And I say no. What we should be doing is encouraging the Iranian people to overthrow this regime. That should be the focus of our efforts in Iran, and I don't believe they are, because the president goes to the United Nations and emphatically says, we're not trying to change the regime in Iran. My reaction to that statement, and this was less than 2 years ago, why not? It's in the United States' interest to overthrow the current regime. It's really of the interest of everyone in the Middle East, as well as Europe, because Iran has become the leading promoter of terrorism throughout the world. Sometimes they do it directly, but most of what they do directly is within the country, suppressing any form of dissent. And for those that are new to the show, the way you listen to the show is go to my companion blog, pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops.wordpress.com. At the very top, you'll see a photograph of yours truly in the studio. Right below it, you'll have links to my most recent 60 to 80 shows. This show probably will be posted, if I can get it edited, completed by about 10 o'clock tonight. Otherwise, it'll be sometime about noon tomorrow. But I include under those links YouTube videos, articles, sometimes tables, photographs, that it would be of interest to you. Some deal directly with the news story I'm commenting upon. Others are more background information. But I point that out if you have time, and I know many of you, especially if you're students, don't have the time. But at a later date, should you have the time, they're always available for your reading, viewing pleasure. Because I always say, you're hearing my opinions and comments, but make up your own mind. And the only way to truly make up your mind is first have an open mind so you hear different points of view and then research it. Occasionally, I make mistakes. I try to avoid them. And when I find out I've made a mistake, I try to correct them. But I try to give you an accurate assessment of what was said as well as what my opinion is. And I truly do not believe the United States government should be negotiating with the Islamic Republic at all. It's a fool's errand. They will never negotiate in good faith. They have a track record of deceiving the United States. While they're negotiating with us and European powers, secretly what they've done is establish usually deep underground facilities where they've installed centrifuges that are running right now. And we have absolutely no assurance that they're not doing that, even if some type of agreement could be reached. As far as I'm concerned, the only acceptable agreement would be if the Iranian regime would agree to the total dismantling of all its centrifuges. That's not going to happen. They're not going to agree to that. I understand they're not going to agree to that. And that's the point. That's really the only acceptable solution is the elimination, destruction of their centrifuges and their capability to restart that and enrich more uranium. You see, the mullahs and the ayatollahs that lead this theocracy, their goal is to have nuclear weapons. And not one or two, but dozens, if not hundreds. And they literally want to wipe the state of Israel off the surface of this earth and to kill all Jews that live there. And that's what they say. It's not what I'm repeating what they're saying. I'm not reading anything into it. That is their goal. So Israel legitimately feels threatened. Now, I need to quickly say Israel has nuclear weapons. But the big difference is they're not engaged in terrorism throughout the world. The Iranian regime is. They have a well-deserved reputation of doing that and supporting terrorist groups such as Hezbollah and also groups in Yemen. And in the news last night, it was broken that Saudi Arabia has used its air force, it has F-15s, it has a number of different types of fighter and bomber aircraft to attack the Shias in Yemen. Ladies and gentlemen, we're on the verge, some would say it's already started, and I'm sort of in that camp, of a religious sectarian war between the Sunnis and the Shia, and it will rage across the Middle East. And what I mean by that, Iran, Iraq, Syria, Yemen, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and maybe even Egypt, and the Sudan, and even further into northern Africa. It's a religious war, and the leadership of that religious war are fanatics. They're jihadists. They're engaged in a holy war. It will be a brutal and hostile one, where no quarter is expected and no quarter is given. It will involve ethnic cleansing, trying to encourage people of the opposite faith to first leave their homes where they've been there for generations and flee, and if you don't do that, then they will slowly but surely execute you. A genocide. And that is what's happening right now in the Middle East. Yet, our president and secretary of state are negotiating and really taking sides with the regime in Iran. There's no good side here. And that needs to be said and remembered often. It is really up to the people that live in these countries to determine, are they going to accept the dictatorship in many of these areas, or are they going to revolt and overthrow the regime and replace it with something that's secular, for example. Problem is, most of the people in all these countries are religious to various degrees. And you have the religious leaders fomenting holy wars, jihads, holy wars against those that are of different faiths. So my opinion is very simple. Stay out. Yes, they have a lot of oil, but the United States, if it had leadership, could be energy independent, or it could import oil from, for example, Canada and to a lesser extent, South America and Mexico. We could also open up federal lands to explore both for oil, petroleum, and natural gas. In other words, our dependency on imported oil could dramatically decrease. It probably shouldn't go down to zero because you want to get the cheapest oil. But at least from the United States perspective and the American people's perspective, we no longer need to be dependent on Middle East for our energy. whether it's oil or natural gas. We have plenty of coal, plenty of natural gas, oil, as well as hydroelectric power and other sources, nuclear power as well. Now, saying that, that's not the end of the story. And here is where Israel and the United States must come together. If the Iranian people cannot overthrow their regime, and they should, and they would like to, because the regime is not popular, and it needs to happen sooner rather than later, for the simple reason, given the track record of the Islamic Republic of Iran, at some future date, not in the distant future, we're talking months, years at most, but probably months, the Iranian regime will have at least one, if not several, nuclear weapons. At first, they probably won't tell us that, but at some point, they will make an announcement and make it very clear to the world that they have nuclear weapons. Now, why is that a problem? These weapons, most likely one or more, would be given to terrorists to set off in Europe and the United States, as well as Israel. That is perfectly feasible. I'm not saying it's easy, but it's definitely feasible. They have the capability to do that, and they have more than enough volunteers that would be glad to try it. In other words, you're going to see a terrorist act that's a nuclear terrorist attack, whether it's Israel, Europe, or the United States. That is the greatest fear of the world leaders in Europe and the United States and Israel, that we will, for the first time, have a terrorist group, and it will take a group of people that are highly motivated on a suicide mission, will set off a nuclear device, and not a small one. And most likely, that nuclear device would have been made in Iran. That's why this regime must be stopped, because if it's not stopped, that is almost a certainty. Now, another concern is, if it's not stopped, you will see in the Middle East nuclear proliferation. In other words, other nations seeing that there's not the will or the leadership from the United States to take out these facilities will embark, some say they already have, on their own nuclear programs. And it's only a matter of time for some countries such as Saudi Arabia to buy and put nuclear weapons on missiles, so that should Iran launch an attack on them, they have the nuclear weapons to respond in kind. And the same thing goes to for Egypt. Most nations that have looked at pursuing nuclear weapons quickly find it's an expensive proposition, and it really doesn't make sense. But when you're faced with the Islamic Republic of Iran, and I'm emphasizing that, this is a religious dictatorship. That's one way to describe it. But what's unique about it is these are extremists. These are fanatics. They're zealots that want to expedite Armageddon. They want to accelerate it, and they're faced with a similar but not identical ideology of Sunni Muslims in the Islamic State that want to do the same thing. Both groups want to kill each other. That's the one thing they have in common. You can go on YouTube. It's not recommended viewing, but you can see the many, many people that the Islamic State have executed, usually by beheading or shooting in the head, in a few cases burning, what they perceive is their enemies, those that don't share their religious belief or are Iraqi government, either military or police, or work for the Iraqi government. Why? Because they're Shia, and if you're the leadership of the Islamic State, you're Sunni, and they're your enemies. And it's the same situation on the other side. You have the Iraqi militias trying to recover and throw out the Islamic State. They're having difficulties doing that. But that's simply the nature of a civil war, just like our civil war between the North and the South. It was very brutal, and the death counts in our civil war were in the hundreds of thousands. And that's exactly what's going to happen in this religious civil war. But I think the body count is going to be much higher, because if one side gets nuclear weapons and is prepared to use them, and they are prepared to use them, if you happen to be a Sunni, when a missile is targeted over your city and a nuclear weapon goes off, you're going to be dead. The important point here to keep in mind that the first victims and the largest victims of this civil war will be the people in these countries that are believers in Islam. But because they believe in the wrong branch of Islam, the other side kills them. Now, what is of concern of the United States citizens is we don't want it in the United States. And there is really no side to choose. As much as we'd like to, if you do try to be objective about it, there's really no side to choose. Yes, we have allies such as Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and they are threatened. And they have in the past relied on the United States to provide for their defense and security. But it gets back to trust. Our allies in the past, unfortunately, over time, have no longer trust in the leadership of the United States, namely President Barack Obama and his Secretary of State. So they're going to break away. They're going to do whatever it takes to defend their kingdom, their country. And always keep in mind, two threads run across all of this. One is the religious divide between Sunnis and Shia, and the other is oil reserves. That's what this is about, being in power and having the economic wherewithal to accomplish what you want. So it's fundamentally a religious resource war, a religious war of those of the Islamic faith, and a resource war over oil reserves and natural gas reserves. Now, the interest of the European Union, the countries of Europe and the United States, and many of the countries in Asia, is primarily in those economic resources. Also, to sell goods and services to these countries, including military weapons. So what's happening is other countries are picking sides. Russia and China clearly have sided with Syria and Iran. The United States has clearly sided with Israel, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and in the past Egypt, although that's somewhat up in the air now. And what our allies are asking is, can we rely, can we trust in the United States? And given its recent track record, both domestically and abroad, they have reluctantly come to the conclusion is, no, we can't. So it's becoming quickly every man for himself. And that's a formula for a regional, if not world war. These are very dangerous times. We don't want nuclear proliferation throughout the Middle East, but if something is not done soon, and I mean real soon, that's going to happen. Not overnight, but it's going to happen. It's the last thing we want. The American people need to wake up. It's going to be too late if a terrorist group explodes a nuclear weapon in the United States, in one of our major cities, or for that matter, Europe. If that happens, we've clearly waited too long, and we're wasting a lot of time negotiating with a regime that you simply can't trust. They will cheat you every time. They don't respect their own people, and they certainly don't respect us, and the time has come to impose crippling sanctions on the Islamic Republic of Iran. And if that doesn't work, based on the best intelligence, Israel and the United States must totally destroy or eliminate the nuclear facilities that Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, have built, both those that we know of and those that we suspect. That means war. But the United States and Iran have been at war using proxies for over 30 years. We should be taking action to support those dissident groups in Iran to overthrow the regime. That's probably the best outcome to hope for. And that should that be accomplished, in other words, the Ayatollahs and Mullahs are overthrown, and that means many of them will be executed and imprisoned. The next step is whoever replaces them must make a decision whether or not they're going to terminate or eliminate the nuclear program. Some of the dissident groups will probably continue with that program. Others wouldn't. So we're fast approaching a date of decision as to whether or not, and I don't think there's a choice here other than the timing and what and who destroys what, the nuclear capability of Iran. And yes, many Israelis, many Americans will lose their lives as well as be wounded when that happens. It's not an easy task at all. And unfortunately, it can quickly expand into the United States. One of the reasons I've been focusing on the invasion between 30 and 50 million minimum illegal immigrants to this country, both by those across the Mexican-U.S. border, as well as come here on a visa and overstay, is the fact that many of those people, a minority, but many of them, are agents of foreign governments, including Iran. They're what the intelligence community would call sleeper agents. And when they're activated, it might be a terrorist attack, it could be sabotage, but they would be activated should the United States go after, and it needs to destroy and eliminate the capability of the Islamic Republic of Iran to develop nuclear weapons. And that needs to be a concerted effort of the Israeli Defense Forces as well as the United States, because the United States has long-range tankers. That is one of several key components that is needed if the attack on Iran will be successful. You first need to take out their command and control and their radar and surface-to-air missile sites. And once you have air superiority, then you take out all nuclear facilities that we're aware of, enrichment facilities where those centrifuges are running. No one is being honest with the American people, with the exception of the Prime Minister of Israel. No one wants to talk about this. It's not a pleasant subject, but it gets back to trust. Trust. And because our current leader, President Obama, duly elected, has support, but not the majority of the support, not anymore, has not shown leadership. If anything, he's tilting towards Iran. That's the impression that I'm getting, our allies are getting, and even our enemies are getting. And they're scratching their heads. And the word traitor is increasingly being spoken. They literally cannot understand what the president is doing and the people he has working for. Nuclear proliferation in the Middle East is not in the interest of the United States or the countries in the Middle East, or for that matter, Europe. That's what needs to be stopped. And apparently, President Obama does not have the will to stop it. He certainly doesn't have a vision, and he certainly doesn't have the will. So instead, he's shooting for a legacy of a treaty or an agreement with the Iranian regime that no one trusts or believes in. As President Reagan repeatedly reminded the Soviet leadership, Gorbachev, trust but verify, trust but verify. And there's an interesting video that I ran across, bringing it to your attention, by a woman that advised President Reagan about the people of Russia, that they were a very religious people, and not to forget that. And it's about an hour, a little over an hour video, and it's entitled Trust But Verify, Reagan, Russia, and Me, and I strongly recommend you view that video. It will give you perspective, because the period of time she's talking about, the second term of Ronald Reagan, starting in 1985, ending in 89, was a period of extreme tension between the Soviet Union and the United States and its leadership. It could have gone the other way and a nuclear exchange could have happened. But Reagan was a leader, was a modest man, but there were a few key ideas that he believed in and was able to ultimately prevent a war between the two nations, but led to the overthrow or fall of the Soviet Union. So I recommend you listen to that video. It's very insightful, because we need such a leader today, and we don't have one in our government, nor do we have in the Iranian government someone corresponding to the Soviet leadership. It was very much a close call in terms of the nations going to war. Most people simply aren't aware of it. They seem to think that the closest call, and I would still argue it was the Cuban Missile Crisis. But after that, this period of time and the relationships between the two nations were very much near, if not at, the brink of war. And fortunately, Reagan, as well as the Russian leadership, found a way to avoid it. That's what we need today. but that will require new leadership in Washington. A second video I want to call your attention to is called Iranium. Now, this video is a couple of years old, and it does have a point of view that I share, but goes through some of the history and the fact that the Iranian people don't support the current regime. The challenge is they don't have the weapons to overthrow it. And I always get back to a point that I make. One of the first things, whenever you have a revolution, the first thing that's collected are the guns. The second thing that are taken over are the television and radio and newspapers. And that's what this dictatorship did. Dictatorships, no matter what basis for that dictatorship, socialism, communism, religion, you name it, whatever the ideology, they don't like dissent. They suppress dissent. They want to eliminate dissent. If you have time, view both of those videos. Now, one other, there's several here that I had a little earlier, was, well, there are two. One where, just to get an idea of who you're dealing with, there's a video on YouTube. The title of it is A Funny Iranian Mullah Lost His Mind. Well, that's one way to put it, but you got to keep in mind these are the mullahs are the people we're dealing with. And this one, I think, had a nervous break. Something gave. That was the funny one. The one below it is not funny. This is another. He was an ayatollah that says we shouldn't arrest our protesters or put them in jail. We should just shoot them in the street. Shoot them in the street. And that's justified under our religion to kill them. To kill their own people in the street. He's saying this. But I want you to recall something. What he was saying was actually done in 2009. And our president didn't speak up at all. He was quiet. You see, it comes back to trust. The people in Iran don't trust their leadership. They know what they're about and what they're capable of. They've seen it with their own eyes. And if they could and they need to overthrow this regime, they will. It's up to them. And I would say, as much as I would like our government to support them, don't expect support from the United States. Your future is in your hands. You're going to have to take risk, and you're going to have to overthrow the dictatorship that's controlling your lives today. And should you be successful, and I hope you're successful, then I recommend that you eliminate your nuclear weapons that are threatening the people of other countries, mainly in the Middle East, but throughout the world. If you are successful and accomplish that, you will find that the American people, the European people, will come to your aid. But you're going to have to start it. You're going to have to initiate it. And that is your decision. Very easy for me to recommend it. But your lives are on the line. And you know better than anyone what these religious fanatics have done to your country over the last decade, the several decades that they've been in power. They are not constrained. They are fanatics. And the first victims are you and then the people in the surrounding nations. Reagan liked to quote the phrase, a Russian phrase, trust but verify. The problem today is there's no trust amongst the people of their leadership and between the leadership of countries. So there's nothing to verify, because the very first step is a certain degree of trust, and there's no trust. So when you cannot trust, you cannot verify. What you need to do is overthrow your regime. And that means death to the mullahs, and death to the dictator, and death to the ayatollahs. Some of them are probably very good people, but some are using religion and are very evil people. You're going to have to determine which is which. And you're going to have to take the action. Because if you're waiting for the United States or Europe to take the action, you'll be waiting an awful long time. And if you decide to wait, do not be surprised that years to come, in the not too distant future, an American leader together with an Israeli leader will be forced to destroy the nuclear weapons that the mullahs and the ayatollahs have secretly developed. They will do this out of defense, self-defense, because they will not permit or allow terrorists, a terrorist regime, to terrorize the people of the world, whether it be in Europe, Israel, or the United States, or any other country. So my heart goes out to the Iranian people. They have hard decisions to make. And as much as I wish the United States government were supporting them, that is not going to happen under President Obama. That is, he has chosen to side with your leadership. That's why he's negotiating with your leadership. He had an opportunity in 2009 to speak out, and he didn't. The silence was deafening. And he goes to the United Nations and emphatically says, we do not seek regime change in Iran. I believe him on that. That's the one thing I believe. He doesn't, because his actions speak louder than his words, and words that you cannot trust. Because we also have a leader that habitually lies and misleads the American people. He will be replaced in an election in 2016. So between now and then, in other words, the end of January, I think it's January 20th of 2017, when a new president is sworn in, I'm not optimistic at all. We live very much in dangerous times where trust or lack of trust is very much the problem. With that, I'll close out my show with America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College.